What if how we view the world is slightly off? What if how you see the world and how you interact with the world and how you understand it is a little off, a little harmful to yourself? How would you even know? I mean, would you even know if your worldview, and that's how you see the world, it's called your worldview, if your worldview was a little off, would you even realize? It reminds me of one time I went to the chiropractor, and he, because I had my lower back was hurting me, and so he's like poking and prodding, he's trying to figure out what's hurting me, and he pokes somewhere in like my shoulder, and it's instantly, oh my goodness, doc, what are you doing? Don't touch that. I'm not here for that. Like, when I came in here, that didn't hurt, and now it hurts. What do I pay you for? What are you doing? Right? I'm supposed to walk out of here feeling better, not worse, and not bad in multiple spots. So what are you doing? He's like, well, actually, that's your problem. I was like, no, my lower back. Like, let me talk more slowly this time. It's my lower back. He's like, no, you don't understand. You see, this is your problem. And you may not feel it right now, but this is throwing everything else off. He's like, here, lay down on your stomach. So I lay down on my stomach on this little like bed thing. And he lifted my feet up towards the ceiling. And one of them was like an inch closer to the ceiling than the other one. He's like, you see, you're off balance. The way that you're walking and moving through the world, it's not quite right. It's a little off balance. And what happens is this thing over here, it's bothering you, it's hurting you at some point, and then you get used to it. It's just how you live now. It's the new normal for you. It's a little off, it's a little flawed, it hurt you a little bit, then you got used to it. The rest of your body, he's like, you're an active guy, the rest of your body, it like counterbalanced, it dealt with it, and then eventually, so you're now living your life and you don't even realize it, and you're slightly imbalanced. And so you're going through life and, you know, it's a little imbalanced and every step is a little different. You know, when you're running, one leg has to work a little harder. And then over time, because you're imbalanced, you get this lower back pain. And you think your lower back is the problem, but it's not. It's this thing over here that's originally your problem. So I can fix your lower back, but it's just going to come back unless you deal with this thing over here because there's a deeper imbalance that's happening. And this is what happens sometimes in our life, is something's unhealthy, something's imbalanced in our life, and we learn to live with it. It's a problem, and then it's no longer a problem because we've learned to live with it until it comes back, and it's a big problem. The same thing that's going on with my back and my shoulder and my lower back is the same thing that happens in our life, where something happens, so we realize something, we begin to believe something about ourselves or the world around us, and it's a problem, and we know it's a problem, and we feel the tension and the pain from it, but then we get used to living with it, but we begin to live with a limp, and as it's a problem, it becomes no longer a problem, it's no longer a problem until it comes back, and it's a big problem. And that's what I think we're going to wrestle with here today, is Jesus is going to give us a way we are to view the world, a worldview. And the reason he's doing this is because he wants it to hold up against our worldview, the way we interact with the world, the way we see the world, the choices we make. And he wants us to act like a mirror. Are you in alignment with this? And if you're not in alignment with this, somewhere along the way, there was a problem, but you learned to live with it, and now it's probably become a bigger problem because you're misaligned. So what could your life be like if you realigned? You'd no longer have to live with a limp. You would be imbalanced, and you would be healthy. And so we're going to wrestle with that. We're going to wrestle with, it's in Luke chapter 20, verses 20 through 22. Luke 6, 20 through 22. By the way, if you don't have a Bible today, I want to give you a Bible. There are Bibles on that back shelf. If you don't have one, you now own one. You just haven't received it yet. Walk out of here, on your way out, grab a Bible. I want to give you a Bible. Every couple months, we are out of Bibles, and we have to order new ones, and it's my favorite purchase of the quarter. I love it, because that means people are taking Bibles. And so if you don't have one, they'll be on the screen. If you don't have one, you would do now, or you can follow on your phone, whatever. We'll be in Luke 6, 20 through 22. But these verses, what you have is you have to understand what's going on before the verses before you can understand the verses. Because what you have is this is Jesus at the very beginning of his ministry. He's just beginning to get some momentum. He's just beginning to be this like itinerant preacher. He's walking around. He's healing people. He's telling people about the kingdom of God. And then there's this moment where he retreats from all of that and he prays all night long, literally all night long. He goes up on a mountainside. And he prays all night long. And he comes back down the mountain, and he points at 12 individuals. He says, I want you to be my closest friends, confidants, ministry partners. And then he goes into these verses. So what he's done is he's sort of defined who Team Jesus is going to be. You know, he's about to enter into the couple years of ministry. And before he does that, he wants to figure out, all right, who are his people? Who's his team? Who's Team Jesus? Who's he going to invest in for the next couple years? Who's going to hand the reins of his ministry off to? So he goes up to a mountain. He prays about who these people should be. He comes back down the mountain. He names them. And then he gives them these verses. Because these verses, they're so foundational. He's trying to create the culture. He's trying to create the team guidelines. Like, all right, if you're going to live a life defined by Jesus, this is sort of like the foundational. This is how you view the world. This is what your life means. This is the purpose. Like, if you're going to be Team Jesus, step one. And so these are what these verses are. And these are very, very significant. They're culture setting. They're what he's trying to do. All right, you're on my team now. You're on my closest friends and confidants. This is what that looks like. So we're going to read through them, and they're going to come back through and unpack them, starting in verse 20. It says, then Jesus turned to his disciples and said, God blesses you who are poor, for the kingdom of God is yours. God blesses you who are hungry now, for you will be satisfied. God blesses you who weep now, for in due time you will laugh. What blessings await you when people hate you and exclude you and mock you and curse you as evil because you follow the Son of Man? That's encouraging. Honey, if we just leave, do you think he'd see us? Slide slowly out. Don't make eye contact with him and he won't see. No, no, no. Right? You're like, oh, that sounds like fun. Great, Jesus. I'm totally on board. Like, that's wonderful. See, what he's doing, though, is it's this interesting thing. He's like creating this sort of system of tension, right? Like, these things he said here, it's this tension that we feel. He's like, happy are you when you're sad. You're like, okay. I don't know. That sounds deep or not. I'm not sure. You're like, oh, the blessings when you are poor. Well, I don't understand what you're getting at, Jesus. So we have to understand here is that if you're going to sum these things up into one phrase, into sort of one understanding, one idea he's trying to get across to his team of what it means to follow him. See, Jesus wants your whole heart, and he wants your heart whole. Jesus wants your whole heart, and he wants your heart whole. And what he's going to unpack these things, these four things that want your heart, that want to steal your heart, that want to imbalance your heart, that want to take little bits of your heart and eat away and erode at your heart. But these things, like we go through life and we gladly give our heart to these things he's going to unpack. We're like, yes, 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 I will invest my whole heart into that. Yes, yes, I'll give my whole heart to that. Yes, I'll give my whole heart to that. And in the process of giving our heart to these things, these four different things, it erodes our heart. It's bad for our heart. And so what he's getting at in these four things, and we'll unpack these in a moment, Jesus wants your whole heart, and he wants your heart whole. And if you give your heart to one of these things, Jesus can't have your whole heart. And if you give your heart to one of these things, it'll slowly but surely erode the health of your heart. So Jesus wants your whole heart, and he wants your heart whole. Let's go back to verse 20, and we'll begin to unpack these things. So verse 20 says this, then Jesus turned to his disciples and said, God blesses you who are poor, for the kingdom of God is yours. Now let's be honest, who's like, man, I wish I could be poorer? No one. That's like the first time I've seen no hands, and I'm like, yep, that's true. No one's lying there. Like, normally I'm like, hands? And people are like, mm-mm. But I'm like, yes, some of you are lying right now. But no one's ever like, yes, I would love to. You know what? I'd wake up in the morning and be like, you know what? I would love to be poorer today. No one's ever, like, no one wants to be poor. This idea of a God blesses, and actually this God blesses here, another translation would be, oh, the joy of, or God blesses, or the blessings of, or oh, the joy of you who are poor. And you're like, I don't even understand what you're getting at, why you're saying this. And the thing is, like, you hear these things, and what happens oftentimes, this is why this is third way, is because when things like money, when things like rich and poor, like these rich and poor, these words are inherently comparative. Rich compared to who? Poor compared to who? Right? These are inherently comparative words. And so baked into these words is winning or losing. Like, man, if you value being rich, if you are rich or if you value money, then winning means more money. But there are people who know that they don't have money, and they read verses like this, and so they think, oh, I'm poor, and that's like super spiritual of me because I'm poor. Like, I'm more spiritual than those, you know, evil, selfish, rich people. So I am, the more poor I am, the more like, yes, I am more godly because, and so you have this sort of this tension of if poor and rich are like these comparative words, then in any sort of comparative, you can find value in being more that than someone else. And so I was talking about this sermon, and someone's like, you're talking about rich, but my whole life, I thought I was more spiritual than other people because I was poor. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, people who, like, any sort of comparative thing, our human heart can make that what we value, like, about ourselves. And so am I going to completely buy into this belief that the one who dies with the most toys wins? Am I going to buy in this belief that I'm more spiritual because I'm poor? Or can we choose this third way? You know, I'm extremely colorblind. I don't know if you guys knew this. It's true. I am what's called an extreme Dutton. I can say that about myself. You can't say that. And no, I was kidding. I'm extremely Dutton. What can I say? So I didn't know this. And one day in our office, I share an office with John, who was standing here, if you don't know who John is. And he was like, hey, there's this colorblind test online. You ever done this before? I was like, no, that sounds like, oh, no. Mm-mm. I was like, all right, well, come, let's do this test. Let's figure this thing out. And so I was like, he was like, all right, it was these pictures. Are these the same? Are these different? And they have like these box of like dots. And in the box, there'll be like a number that's a different color. But if you can't see the number, then that factors that in. And so the box of these pictures, boxes of dots, numbers, like some I can read, some I can't. And then it like, all right, tallying the results, you are an extreme Dutton. I'm like, you want to fight? No. And so like a month later, I'm over at John's house, my wife and I, and he's like, hey, I got you something. And he handed me, you'll see a picture here in a second, those are Enchroma colorblind glasses. Super generous gift. He's like, put these on. And he was hoping for like the very like emotional response of like, I can see color for the first time. And I was like, oh, wow, cool, yeah. But so come to find out that there are like parts of my eye I just don't have, and so I can't possibly have like rods and pins. It's not important. I didn't see all the colors that you all can see. But then I now owned these sunglasses. And I've never had sunglasses that expensive before. And I don't feel stress. Like I go through life pretty stress-free. It stresses my wife out, you know? Like how stress-free I am. I'm just breezy, baby. And but suddenly, I was so stressed about these sunglasses because they're kind of expensive. They were a gift. It was like a surprise gift from my friend. If I didn't know where they were at all points throughout the day, it like freaked me out. Like I would like, I'd be going through my day, like, oh wait, where are the sunglasses? Where are they? You know, it's like, because they were stressing me out. Like I had to know where they were at all points and times. And I don't have that anymore because I lost them, but it's true. It took me 2 months to tell John. That's also true. It's true. Because they owned my heart even after I no longer had them. Do you see that? Like the stuff that you own, it has this way of owning you. And the more that you place your heart into stuff that doesn't matter, the more of your heart you is less available to Jesus. And so I placed my heart into these sunglasses, and I was worried about them, and like they took my mental space, but took my emotional space. I walked with guilt for 2 months, literally, based on these sunglasses. I was like, at some point, I'm going to have to tell him. Like, I would take my other sunglasses off and walk in. Like, I wasn't wearing sunglasses that day because, like, because the stuff that you own eventually owns you. And what Jesus is saying, he's saying, man, like, if you own lots of stuff, eventually your stuff owns you. And if you are so obsessed with winning, with accruing more stuff, more money, if it's like another way of proving yourself, the zeros and commas in your bank account, that owns your heart. I'm not saying don't have wealth. I'm not saying don't accumulate those things. I am saying don't let that be your purpose. If that's something God has graced you with, use that for his glory. Right? I mean, God calls us to like to work hard. He says, work hard and peaceable at your life. He says these things. He's not against, you know, accumulating, you know, money. This is not something he's calling. He's not saying everyone should be poor. He is saying those things, those dollars and those zeros and those commas in your bank account, they should never own your heart. Never own your heart. And if they begin to creep into your heart and you value them, they define you, eventually that'll eat away at your heart. Jesus wants your whole heart, and he wants your heart whole. What he's saying here is he's saying, don't let these things own your heart. Go to verse 21. Boy, am I preaching? What? Let's go. This is good. This is fun. Verse 21, God blesses you who are hungry now, for you will be satisfied. I'm hungry now, so I'm blessed. No. Like, I'm hungry all the time, so I must be, like, really walking in God's favor or something. No. This idea here, he's talking about like this idea of man, there are people who hunger for more and their bellies are full, right? They have a full belly. They don't need more and they constantly want more. They're constantly like in need of, and they live in this rhythm of consumption, and they're wanting and consuming and wanting and consuming and wanting and consuming. This verse, there's a parallel verse in Matthew. So these verses I'm reading now, there's some in Luke and there's some in Matthew, and they're called the Beatitudes. But in Matthew it says, "Blessed are you who hunger and thirst after righteousness." And what he's saying here is he's not those of you who are hungry now. He's saying those of you who, whether you're hungry or you're full, you're hungry for God. Like, what you want ultimately is, yes, there are things that you want, and there are things that you go through life and you desire, and then if you get these things, your desires turn to something else, and if you live in this constant, perpetual, I want something, and I get it, and I want something else, and I get it, and I want something else, and I get it, and your heart is being eaten up by these things that you want. I want this, and then I get it, and I want that, and I get it, and I want that, and I get it. You live in this, like, this treadmill of wanting and desiring and being, and desire and being satiated, but then desire and being, he's like, hey, let go of that. Get off the treadmill. What you need to do is you need to hunger and thirst for me. So if you're constantly living, like, appeasing your appetites, you're on this treadmill, it's never, ever, 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 ever going to stop. People who can have a full belly and still be desperately hungry. So hunger and thirst for me. He's saying hunger and thirst for that. You know, how often does he call himself bread in the Bible? He says, you know, those of you have my bread, the bread of life, you'll never be hungry again. He's saying we have these appetites, and people live their entire life just pursuing appetite after appetite after appetite. And I want that, 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 and I want that. And then one day they die, and their whole life was just chasing. Thomas Merton says this, as you spend your entire life climbing the ladder of success, until you get to the top and realize your ladder was leaning against the wrong wall. Man, I'm climbing, I'm climbing, I'm climbing. I want that, I want that, I want that. And you get to the top of the ladder and you realize you invested your entire life in the wrong wall. man, I'm climbing the ladder of pursuing my appetites, and you realize, get to the top and you realize that you have your stuff, but that doesn't actually accomplish anything. You know, people can climb the ladder of physical fitness, people can climb the ladder of respect, and they spend their entire life climbing, and they get to the top and they realize their ladder was leaning against the wrong wall. Look at the last half of that verse 21. God blesses you who weep now, for in due time you will laugh. And we've been having fun here, you know, we've been laughing and stuff in here. And he's not saying always be sad, right? He's not saying like go through life like, hi, I'm Jake, but I'm fine. I just love Jesus. Right? He's not telling you to go through life constantly in mourning, constantly weeping. God blesses you who weep now, for in due time you will laugh. But you know what I find? Is that people who go through seasons of mourning, and they mourn deeply and they mourn well, it changes them. Like they're a more grace-filled person. Have you ever known someone who made terrible decisions in their life? Terrible decisions, maybe destructive decisions. And when they get past those decisions and they look back at their life and the mistakes they've made and they become really passionate about helping other people avoid those same mistakes because they've gone through that season of, like, they've wasted their life, they've gone through the mourning, they can't ever get those time back, and now they're just super passionate about other people not doing that same thing. Or you have someone who maybe they've invested their whole heart into a marriage and the person turned out to be not the person they thought they were going to be, and they're left and they're just kind of like a wreck. And then once they get past that season of mourning, like they're more grace-filled, they're more loving, they're more forgiving. That like something about this process, it molded them and changed them into something else. You know, Friar Richard Rohr says this. He says, the two great paths of transformation are great love and great suffering. And that this Jesus, and his idea is like, okay, so life is going to offer suffering. I'm not saying Jesus causes suffering, but I am saying that life offers suffering. And what Jesus does is he uses that suffering and he gives you that great love, that forgiveness. Like you go through, you make poor mistakes, you wreck your life, and there's great suffering. But then Jesus comes in and he offers you this great love, this forgiveness, this grace, this invitation, this purpose. Yes, you wreck your life, but you're still on purpose because you're still my child and I still love you and I still have grace for you. And so we have this great suffering and this great grace, and then we walk through life and we're more gracious for other people, we're more forgiving of other people, we're more loving of other people. The flip side is true sometimes when people go through great suffering, and if they are proud of how they handled it, they're like, yes, I went through that thing. Yes, I went through that season. And now I got myself through it. I pulled myself up. I have better habits now. That person becomes less gracious. They become less forgiving. Even on someone who comes through these seasons and now they're more regimented. They're more legalistic. They're like, you ever known someone who was like super, like a mean Christian? Like they just like have this like this mean spirit to them and this legalistic like oh, I'm here and you're here. This is probably someone who went through great suffering and they are proud of how they got themselves through it. And so they raised and elevated themselves a little bit instead of acknowledging that God loved them and forgave them and gave them grace and brought them through it. They become self-reliant instead of God-reliant. They become meaner. But the opposite is true. Oh, the joy, the blessing of going through this. Man, we don't mourn well, do we? Culturally, we don't mourn well. Like we go into seasons of mourning and pain and either or, like third way, right? Sometimes you see people and they don't acknowledge the pain they're experiencing. I'm fine. I'm just going to keep my head down. I'm just going to work hard. And they pour themselves into their work. And they work like 80-hour work weeks until they don't feel their feelings. And the other side of this is that then like, you see people who, like, their pain they suffered, it defines them in every conversation, no matter, hey, how's the weather? My pain, you know, oh, yeah, you see that score? Yes, my pain. Like, everything goes back to their pain. They're defined. Like, this pain they experienced, it defines their life moving forward. He's saying, no. Acknowledge the blessing that this great suffering, this great love is to shape you and mold you and make you a grace-filled, loving, forgiving person. It's not this, you're not denying it, you're not being defined by it, it's the third transcendent way. Verse 22. What blessing await you when people hate you and exclude you and mock you and curse you as evil because you follow the Son of Man? Every single person in here has some belief that if someone else knew it, they would hate you for your belief. Every single person in here has some belief that someone else in our world would hate you because of that belief. Every single one of you. Me. All of us. There are people who hate other people for their beliefs. It just happens. This is true. It's just the way that the world works. People are hate-filled. You cannot please everyone all the time. You just can't. If you are, you either can please the person across from you or be true to who God made you to be all the time. All the time. You know what he's doing here? From this kind of like low-level rumble of codependency we all operate with. I was talking to my wife recently, and I mentioned someone. I was like, man, do you ever get the sense that this person, they're like 50% more messed up than they let on? And my wife, the prophetess Kristen that she is, she's like, I'm 50% more messed up than I am, and so are you. We all are. And I was like, you're so right. That's so deep. I'm going to use that. So, and I just did. Full circle. We live with this sort of like low-level rumble of codependency. I need the person across from me to love me, to accept me, to think I'm funny, to think I'm wise and compelling, and probably like a long list of things. You know, funny, wise, attractive. That goes without saying. No, I'm just kidding. Right? Like we have these things that we want to present ourselves as. And the thing is, this is so great. It's so wonderful. Because he's holding up this sort of like system of acceptance and not acceptance that we all live with. And the underlying current is his unconditional love for you. So we live in this sort of like low-level rumble of codependency with everyone around us. Meanwhile, Jesus says, man, I love you unconditionally exactly as you are. Now, I don't want to leave you here. I think there's growth that you have. Like, I want you to become who I've made you and called you to be. But right where you are here now, I love you unconditionally. And so we have this unconditional love offered to us. And we're like, yeah, that's good. But that person doesn't like me, and that person didn't like my... I posted this picture, and I only got 7 likes. And it's like we live so desperate for everyone's approval and acceptance all the time. He's like, hey, man, blessed are you when people hate you and mock you. You've just broken free of this need for codependency. And because of this, you're going to lean more into my love, which is always present and available and unconditional for you anyway. Because he wants your whole heart, and he wants your heart whole. And these things that try and steal our heart, they're just going to eat away at our heart anyway. They're just going to like slowly but surely deteriorate our heart anyway. So this third way thing, it's giving Jesus our whole heart. And in so doing, he keeps our heart whole. So let me ask you some questions. Has life become one big competition? Are you always competing with someone for something? Competing for attention, competing for affection, competing for who has the best toys, competing for who has the, you name it. Is life one big competition? Do you see cycles of constant wanting? It's like, I want this and I get it, and I want this and I get it, and I want this and I get it. Have you put your ladder leaned against the wrong wall? How is your relationship with pain? Do you deny it? Do you allow it to define you? We don't do pain well. Whose approval do you crave most? Be honest with yourself for a moment. Like, if you're going to say whose approval you crave most, whose love do you crave most? Whose acceptance? See, Jesus is over here, and he knows he made you, and he has a plan for you, and, and, he, And he's like, yes, I love you, and just like lean into me, and we'll begin working you towards this, like towards this best possible optimal life for you. And the whole time, we just like, we crave that person and that person and that person and that person's attention and that person and that person and that person and that person. And Jesus is like, yes, 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 but lean into me, lean into me. Thing is, whenever like the sermons like this, where I'm like looking at people's lives and I'm trying to poke and prod, and it's not me, you realize it's not me, it's like Jesus' word. It's like he's giving you, he's looking, like I said before, he has a worldview, a way that he wants you to view the world, and he wants you to hold up yours against his. And eventually what happens there is we look at this long enough, we see where ours are misaligned, where ours got off somewhere, where we love money, where we see like that money and our stuff has like rooted its way into our heart, and or an approval, or whatever that is. Like eventually, if you look long enough at your worldview, you see where it's misaligned with who Jesus called you to be. So we can like beat ourselves up for that. But core to how, to why I do what I do, to this time, to how I approach this, is I want to build you up, not beat you up. Like if these words, you can walk out of here feeling a little beat up. Like, man, like, I'm just so messed up. I have these problems. My thing, like, I've given my heart away to so many different ways. Like, oh, I failed again. I was talking to a friend of mine last night about, like, he made some mistakes. He's not really doing the things he's trying to do. He's giving himself over to Jesus, and he's wanted, in all areas of his life, he's like, oh, I messed up here, I messed up here, I messed up here, I messed up here. He's kind of beating himself up. And I was like, my man, you don't understand. You don't get it. You don't see how God sees you. I was like, what do you mean? I said, all right, I got 3 kids. At different stages in their life, they'll come home with like drawings they made at school. They're always terrible. Oh, honey, that's a wonderful pony. That's our house. Sorry, it's a wonderful house. I'm sorry. Right? I love it. The thing is, I do love it because they walk up and I drew this for you. I'm like, oh my goodness, thank you so much. And what is that? That's them expressing their love to me in the best way they know how. Man, when you go through life and you mess up and you paint an ugly picture, you're like, Jesus, I did this for you. He loves it. Yes, you messed up. Yes, it's not perfect. Yes, there are people making better pictures. But you did this with love for him, and so he cherishes it. So realize that I think we all have worldview stuff to work through. We all have growth opportunities here. But if we're making this picture of our life and we're giving it to Jesus with great love, he loves it. He loves you unconditionally. He's proud of you. And the picture you're painting, he loves it. So don't feel beat up. Be built up. But be honest about how you view the world and hold it up against the way that Jesus calls us to. Let's pray. Jesus, this is in some ways tough because it kind of roots around in our heart and the things that we value and the way that we're constantly in pursuit of the way people see us and gaining people's approval and the way that our stuff and our money has this way of like rooting into our lives and our hearts. And so in some ways this is tough, but in other ways, Jesus, this is deeply invitational. Like this is you inviting us into a wholehearted existence. And so we thank you for it. We thank you for the way, Jesus, you could have left this stuff out and we could have just gone through life and we could have lived with no ability for a whole heart, you know, and you call us to give us give you our whole heart. And that at first seems like, Jesus, come on, like you want all of me? But it's because anything we don't give to you eventually deteriorates. Like this world eats away at it. And so it's the most loving thing for us you could ever do is to call all of us to you, our whole life. Jesus, we thank you for these passages. We thank you for the way that it roots around into our heart and our minds and our values and our worldview. We thank you for the way that the tension it creates and the way that doesn't feel like it makes sense because it shouldn't make sense. If it's going to call us something new, it shouldn't make sense with our world today. It should create tension. And so we thank you for that tension. We know that you want our whole heart and our heart whole. We know that. So anything that's standing in the way of that, God, we ask you to show us. As we hold our worldview up to the way you want us to view the world, God, if there's any misalignment, show us. Show us. We could not even see it. We could be imbalanced and not even know it. It's not like we don't even feel that tension, that pressure anymore. So we love you. We do want to give you our whole heart. And we thank you for the way you call us to that. In your name, amen.